Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, we are getting an update from Graphene Manufacturing Group, traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol GMG. I am chatting again with the founder and CEO, Craig Nickel. Now, I know a lot of our listeners are up to speed on GMG thanks to the number of webinars we've done and the number of times that I brought Craig on the show, and I can tell the interest because of how many questions we have received. And that's something we're going to be doing a bit more of, is these Q&A segments with Craig to address all of your questions. Now, just to bring everybody up to speed, GMG is a clean technology company. The company has a proprietary production process to manufacture graphene powder, and the company also has three key product lines that are all moving towards a revenue stage here. They're batteries, which the company has just produced some coin cell prototypes. There's also the Thermal XR division, which, as we know, it is air conditioning coating to make air conditioners and other devices more efficient, as well as graphene lubricants. Now, as I mentioned, all of these questions that I'm going to go through with Craig have been sent in, and we are going to be doing a more regular segment here with Q&A. So please keep on sending me your questions. If we didn't get to your question in this segment, I'll do my best to bring it up the next time I have Craig on. And a lot of these questions are simply carryovers from that webinar, the last webinar we did on January 31st. Now, Craig, we're going to start off with the Thermal XR division, because this is a division that I think most people are looking at saying the company seems pretty close to some sort of revenue. You already have some companies or some countries actually testing out the Thermal XR, but are there any insights you can give us in terms of expanding Thermal XR into other countries? Have other governments approached you? What can you tell us about the expansion potential here of the Thermal XR division?
That's great. Great to be back on, Corey. And as always, love to hear the questions. So let's get into them. So TXR is definitely the most advanced product we have to be seeing, you know, significant revenue come in. And as we've talked about before, we have projects in Australia, Dubai, and in Singapore. And we're looking to open that out to North America, which hope we can start that shortly. Obviously, the biggest market for cooling in the world. So, you know, I think that there was a lot of work that went into last year about getting more data, and I think that of performance from the TXR. And, you know, we have got a significant amount more data. We've got a number of projects actually showing on our website. We have more data and more projects than actually we have on our website as well, as they get updated. What we're noticing is that we do believe there's a way for us to use our equipment on with original equipment manufacturers, so the actual suppliers of air conditioners and heat exchangers. So we're testing out that, as well as working through the existing funnel sales opportunities and looking to progress the data that we have into significant sales. One of the hardest things to do when you bring a new technology is to work out the route to market. Now, we've got pretty much every route to market available with this product. You know, it can go on existing aircons. It can go on through HVAC installers or air conditioning installers or service people. It can go through distributors for HVAC companies for parts and equipment. It can go through the original equipment manufacturers, and it can go through new to market distributors. And so, you know, we are trying to work out, you know, the best route to market, and that's the other space we're working on very intensely. And so, you know, that brings in other countries as well. So there's other subcontinent markets where there's a very large cooling requirement, and so we're actually opening those conversations as well. So it's all about creating that significant opportunity in the right route to market in the right countries, progressing that into significant revenue. And that's what we're focused on.
Now, when we come to general revenue here within that presentation that you had for the last webinar, the Thermal XR market you outlined as $26 billion. What does that translate into in terms of potential revenue for GMG?
Yeah, that is the long-term market opportunity for saving 10% of commercial existing energy bill, around 10% or so. Now, what that means is there's another big market also on travel, mobility, air conditioning, which we know has got, you know, applications with our existing data testing we've done. Plus also we're finding, and we've done our first industrial site radiator cooling system as well over the festive break. So the market size is opportunity, I think, is growing. Where, of course, what you want to do is you find significant revenue in the right route to market, in the right countries, get that pushed through, and then, you know, that's we think that's in millions of dollars. That's what we save significant revenue, and then the opportunity to grow that. And because we've literally got, this is the only product like it in the market, a heat transferring coating system using graphene, wondrous heat transfer qualities. We know it doesn't work with other graphene, and we know it doesn't work with other coating systems. So the chance for that to grow into a significant, almost unicorn in itself, is really up to us. The tech is there. The data shows that this has potential to be a mass scale product used on original equipment manufacturing, all the way through to installed air conditioning units. So that's what we're that's why we believe the market is so large, and the opportunity for TXR sales is, you know, eventually you're talking at very large scale, and that's why we picked it as well.
Now, does revenue really predicate on a government or large company coming in and utilizing the TXR, or could it be done with individual, smaller type deals?
Yeah, we've certainly seen some small sales with large companies who want to try it out and have a demonstration site themselves. So we're starting to see companies buy product just because they see the data and it's worthy of something that they want to do themselves, which is great. There is potential for some government support, but really it's you've got businesses saying, I want to reduce my energy bill and I want to use your product, or I want to help add another revenue line item for HVAC companies and I want to use your product to do that, or I want to reduce my emissions, you know, because I've got a stated emissions reductions outcome, you know, for some big large companies. And that's where that product can come in as well. So there are many different avenues, and just the sheer fact that it reduces maintenance costs as well, and, you know, extend the life of your coils, your HVAC systems, also is another angle. So I think there's a number of ways. Government is only one of them, though.
Okay, let's move on to the lubricant division, because we didn't get a whole lot of chance to discuss that at the last webinar, but there were a number of questions that came in. One question, just to get us started here, is give us a little overview of the lubricant division, how they work, and what is the path to revenue?
Sure. So what we do is we take our graphene, which has really good suspension quality, so it disperses in the oil very nicely because we make it from a hydrocarbon. It goes back into hydrocarbon very nicely. We then use a whole lot of really intense physics and chemistry to make sure that it actually is dispersed and distributed throughout the oil. We typically disperse it, say, 100 times what you would normally use it in. You're typically only using 0.01% or 0.05% in terms of its use. So very small amounts of graphene, and that's by weight. And so we would then make a concentrate, say 100 times that, or 50 times or 10 times, depending on where the demonstration projects are at. And then we would either sell or provide that free for a demonstration project where we look to get the performance features back. So what that means is we can provide a very small amount of oil concentrate, and then that goes a long way into production for the base oil blending company or the actual lubricant oil company. I was the previous marketing manager for the industrial sector for Shell for Australia, and so I have some knowledge in this space. We're in no way going to be going and making our own oils. That's absolutely a path to a distraction for our company. We're focused on making additives for large companies, and we have some tier ones, so global players in the program and testing. It does take some time for those guys. They need to look at all their chemistry and how it performs. What they're looking for is the reduced energy consumption, so reduced emissions, and they're also looking for increased wear protection. And there's enormous amount of science papers out there saying that's what you get with graphene, but it typically falls out because when you make it from graphite, it does fall out a lot quicker, whereas our graphene stays suspended. And that is the real advantage from ours. And we've got years of oils that we've mixed that stay suspended. You typically need to have an oil that stays suspended for at least 3 years so that it can travel through the value chain of a lubricant as it gets blended, sits on a shelf, gets shipped out and put on a retail site and then bought by a customer and then used. And so that is what we're seeing with our oils, with our suspensions, which is really world class. So not only do we have great heat transfer, we've got great, we got some good data showing energy wear reduction. What we're now working on is, well, what is the pitch for these oil companies, and how can they see that themselves, and how they would transfer that into their market? Oils are about 75% marketing, 25% technical in terms of how they get pitched out into the world. So they need to have that marketing angle clear, and they need to have the technical basis clear. And of course, that takes some time. And I used to do this for a living, so I know how long and complex it can be. But these are very large markets, stable, lots of consumption. Oil lubricant consumption is not going away anytime soon, despite electric vehicles, you know, on the rise.
Oh, that actually answers the other question of how graphene is being tested in vehicle lubricants when it comes to near-term revenue or some sort of revenue coming up from the lubricant division. Similar question to the Thermal XR question. Does that mean you need to partner with a bigger, maybe distributor or bigger car player in the car industry to get that out into market?
Yeah, I think there's a number of ways to channel there, a number of routes to market, but the obvious one is working with the lubricant blenders, and that's what we're doing. And they've got all of the supply chains there, and we just go in as a blend. And we do have some smaller kind of tier two, tier three customers moving into commercial production in Southeast Asia. There's a lot of blenders in Southeast Asia, a lot of lubricant blenders, because that's where a lot of the oils used to come from and still do. A lot of base oils. So, you know, that's the first stage. We start to see some tier two, tier threes, start to see the traction, and then you go through the testing programs of the larger companies, and then you move into kind of conversations about how this can get to market and what they push into as a marketable product. You'll notice that all the top synthetics are all focused on energy emission reductions. That's their main game these days. So we're right in the sweet spot. And so we just need to keep showing the performance data for our, you know, potential blenders at scale to push this through. And I think, you know, what you're really trying to do is get a large distributor, global distributor to work with us in the end who can make that happen. So it'll be very different to the battery and TXR opportunities.
All right, let's move into the battery division because, boy, oh boy, there are a lot of questions there. Let's start off with the power curve for the battery output. Does it follow that of a lithium ion, i.e. is power output strong right down to a low state of charge?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting question. So lithium batteries really can't go below a certain voltage. So the power gets to a point where that you have to stop using it, and so the battery management system actually kicks in, and you tend not to go below 1 volt, 1.5 volts, and you don't want to go deep cycle too often to the point where you can You can stall the battery if you go all the way down to zero, for instance, on a lithium battery often. Of course, there are exceptions. There always will be. But generally, you don't play all the way down with a lithium battery. You've got to keep it generally half cycle is generally how they're tested. When we first started testing our battery, we were doing full cycle, full deep cycle, and it can go to zero and then come back up. And we're actually told that's not how we should test our batteries. So the industry was telling us that we were testing it wrong. But actually, when you think about it, lithium batteries are constrained there, and that's why the industry tests half cycle. Whereas we test full cycle. Generally, we go down to about half a volt, and then we come back up. But we have seen it can go to zero as well. But that is too much for industry to genuinely accept. Also, you don't tend to go to zero because you want to get some volts, kept so that you can keep going. You can't genuinely use that kind of low voltage in many applications. So, yes, it's got full cycle over thousands of cycles. And that is actually, in the end, a big selling point. But the market's got to be able to understand how to use that as well.
Yes, they do. One other question that deals with just these general power output or how these batteries perform. How do the batteries hold up in cold weather conditions?
Yeah, so we haven't been able to test it thoroughly. We need to go through all that, but I think we've had some okay results. So no performance deterioration at around 0 degrees, but we need to do more work there. There's actually real significant equipment that you put it into, tested at high temperatures and low temperatures. So theoretically, there should be no real issue. We have a hybrid supercapacitor battery, so it actually charges by both by ion and also by electromagnetic force. So it's a or field. So it's a very different battery to a lithium-ion battery, which is only charging through ion transfer. So obviously, you shouldn't see much deterioration with temperature with or change in temperature with a electromagnetic field. And obviously the ions, there is no chance for dendrites to form, which is the main reason why lithium batteries start to reduce their energy density, their power output. And so we don't have those dendrites. So there's technically no reason why it should actually be a problem there as well from the ion discharge with temperature. So I think what it comes down to is electrolyte performance under temperatures, and that's what we've got to test. And currently, technically, we don't see there should be a big difference, but yeah, we need to get to the bottom of it and then come out with that.
Okay, and then there are a number of questions to deal with getting your batteries into the EV market. And look, that is an obvious growth avenue, and it's on everybody's mind, the EV market and the growth that we are seeing there. It does take time to get into that market. And again, you guys are still just at the coin cell prototype. But let's talk generally. Many of EV manufacturers are heavily invested in lithium. So how do you go about breaking into that market?
Yeah, so it's actually the door's being opened for us. We're not really knocking on it. We've had a number of vehicle manufacturers reach out and under NDA, and it's all very early stage. They're interested. They want to understand it. They're obviously wanting to go to batteries. They want to be part of the transition. Almost all of them, I think, now have all the big ones anyway, have made some kind of move towards the being in a full EV fleet by some date. And there are constraints with lithium, and they're understood. Fast car charging is difficult with lithium, and 600 to 1,000 cycles per battery is also a problem, and also just the supply constraints that lithium batteries hold as well. So I think they've got to take tech on board and be a part of that. I think there's a, from what I hear, from what I see, there's a bit of FOMO by these guys because they realize if they do miss out on some battery tech that could change the way vehicles charge, then they could well, miss out on their whole product range being delayed because of that compared to competitors who might get it. So that's being considered. And so hence we do get people reaching out from big vehicle companies. But, as I said, it's early days. We're pouch pack. We haven't made a pouch pack yet out of this. conceptually, there should be no problem, but until you've done it, you haven't done it. So hence, we don't want to put that much focus on those conversations right now. I think the end game would be to have some EV batteries and really provide a stunning high performance vehicle with our battery. But that there's a long ways to go, Corey, and be very happy to see that day.
I'm sure you will be. And hey, there are a lot of people interested in the company that would also are really looking forward to that day. Now talking generally about some of the intellectual property that undoubtedly GMG has developed here, how do you go about protecting this globally?
Yeah, so we have a thing called a patent fence. So we don't our process of how we make our graphene is really quite unique. We have a because we obviously make it our graphene from natural gas through a continuous process. So we don't use any other gases, and that creates a product which is then so that's under a trade secret. And then that product then gets put into these other products we've just been talking about, and there will be others that will come up. Because our process is quite unique, when we go and put it into other products, we can then form a patent around that product and then protect that product, and then we can also protect the process as well. And so that's our strategy. And it's used by a number of big companies where they don't want to talk about their process because process patents are almost useless because somebody could just copy it and change one thing, and we'll never know that they're using the process that they've copied. But in the meantime, we couldn't even defend it. We'd have to go and find someone who's and enter their plant and inspect their plant if they've to see if they've copied it. So. But a product patent is a lot more defendable. So when we use a product patent to protect our upstream graphene process, it protects both in our eyes. So that's the strategy. A lot of this, though, is really first to market, get a good traction, get a good brand, deliver on target, and make the next move. And that will always be our core focus, and the patents are definitely something that you use as a table stake, but they're not what we're relying on in any way.
Okay, let's wrap it up here. Final question. Thank you already for addressing all these questions. And as I said, everyone keeps sending me your questions, but somebody noted that they're a shareholder, but out of the three product margins that all require their different expertise and resources, how does GMG broadly intend to work on all three at the same time in a meaningful and impactful and profitable way?
That's a great question, Corey. And we're currently, we always are thinking about how to push all products along. We're just in a process of recruiting more people, a substantial number of more people to come in to help us because we believe that is the right thing. We've hit a significant interest level across all our products that we need to bring in more capacity, which is really exciting for us. And there'll be a number of people who'll come in to help push this through. Honestly, now we need to hold these products and push them through in a way which enables to get to the next level. And that's what we just need to do. So, you can talk about simplification, you could talk about splitting the business out. We have an integrated graphene and graphene product business. That is the strategy. It holds a great portfolio optionality, which is always rich in your ability to push various different things at the right time. And focus on different things at the right time that the market wants them. So right now, that is our strategy, and I think it's a good strategy, and many big companies have used that to last many long decades of years of life, such as my former company Shell that I used to work for. So I think that is where we stand, and it's all integrated into the knowledge of the graphene, and we learn everything about each product and how the graphene works, and that then it gets applied into the other product lines and businesses, And then as we grow, you start to see those divisions becoming quite strongly backed by individual people and business focus individually. But right now, we're using all of the advantages and kind of economies of scale of as a graphene producer to push all business or products along. And what's interesting, I had a managing director of a very large company in my office last week, and he is literally working on all three products for his business. And that's not uncommon. All of these products are adjacent to each other, and they can literally be sold to any one company in the world. So that is the other element of it, is that they actually are all in some way connected, which is, of course, very exciting for companies who want to be able to improve their efficiency and save money and save emissions on all three areas that we focus on. So that's a good validation for me as well. And, you know, I think that'll stay for a very long time.
All right, Craig, really appreciate you addressing these questions. I still have a number of them that we will get to in future interviews. And please, everybody, keep sending me your questions. My email address is fleck@kereport.com. I will add those to the list. And as I mentioned, I'll be doing this sort of Q&A with Craig on a much more regular basis. Craig, thank you, as always, for your time. Very informative here. I really appreciate you taking on all of these questions.
Thanks, Corey. Talk again soon.